You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3. The unofficial fifth line of the Leafs.
If you want to hit in the playoffs, you have zero chance. We're not talking about, you just said it, not fighting, not six, some 6 foot five goon. But if you don't hit, like, you have no chance to win. The playoffs flip like that. It turns into a war zone.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Final hour Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. Brian Hayes and Craig Button in studio. The O-Dog is out of here. Panel work tonight. Noodles down in Jersey calling one of the worst games of the year on paper. Devils, Senators, and we don't believe Matt Duchene, Ryan Dezingle, or Mark Stone are even going to play for Ottawa tonight. So the whole hockey world is kind of focused on the Sens because there's a chance their three best forwards and their three top guys get traded between now and the deadline on Monday. So we're tracking that throughout the hour to see what's going on. The Leafs are back in action tonight. They're back home after a long road trip. And I know players say this all the time, Craig, that there's something about coming back off after a long, drawn-out road trip where that first game at home, it's a struggle. So it's almost as if, you know, they've already planted the seed. I'm not saying the Leafs were doing this today. I'm speaking in generalities in pro sports. But as a management type, did you brace yourself for that as well? If you walked into the rink, if you're Kyle Dubas, so you're walking into Scotiabank saying, this might get ugly tonight?
What's fascinating about it is that you know it, you feel it, you try to manage it, you try to overcome it, you try to address it, right? But it's just like, it's like a malaise, right? It's like when you come back from a vacation, right, and you're off for a while, and it takes a day or two or three to really get back into the swing of things. I mean, on the road, it's really interesting too. A long trip like that, you know, you're moving, you're only with the group. Right, like, and so there's a different kind of attention that you're exhibiting, and then it all goes back to, you know, oh, we're home, and now my teammates aren't here, and you know, you're not, it just takes a little bit of time to run back, and everybody knows it. Everybody knows it.
You know it's coming.
Honestly, what you do is you cross your fingers and you hope that, hey, you know what? Let's hope we can have a good. And maybe the one good thing is Washington was out on the West Coast.
Right, exactly.
You know, maybe that works for the Toronto Maple Leafs. But
you don't know until the puck drops.
You
really don't.
And you can talk about it and try to say, okay, we got to be ready to go. Like, oh, and everybody knows, but you don't really know.
No, you don't. But we'll find out at
around
7 p.m.
One of those great mysteries.
Yep, that's pro sports for you, man. You got to go out there and play the games. Yeah. Tomorrow night's going to be a really special night, though, at Scotiabank. It's going to be a great weekend because you got Raptors-Spurs tomorrow night. Tonight, I mean, look at the next three nights. You've got Ovechkin and the Caps in town. That's a big ticket. Tomorrow, you've got DeMar returning in the Spurs. That is the biggest ticket. And Saturday, it's Leafs-Habs.
Oh.
Like, that is a three-night run. If you're lucky enough to pull off tickets to all three. You know, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago when the Leafs and Raptors were both in New York. You know, the Leafs were in Montreal on the Saturday night, and then they were playing at the Garden, the Rangers on the Sunday night. The Raptors were playing the Knicks on the Saturday night. Like, that would be a go-to tour for a Toronto sports fan to get down to New York. I would think this would be a three-day stretch for a lot of people, if you're lucky enough to be in Toronto and get down there. But even if you're from all over the country. Like, let's say you're just a big Toronto sports fan, and you live in Vancouver, and you have one hall pass, three nights, you can go to three games. It's not going to get any better than the next three nights.
I don't think
so. This is it.
I don't think so.
In terms of regular season. You know, playoffs is a different story, but...
But it's February, too, which kind of, you know,
It's a dog day.
Weather, you know, freezing rain yesterday. It's still a little cold. You know, daylight savings is coming up in a week, you know, which kind of turns another... it's another mood swing, I think. But, you know, hey, you're right.
It's going to be a great three nights. Great three nights. And tomorrow night, like, DeMar's already here. The Spurs are here. We're coming off the All-Star break, so that they're not playing until they meet tomorrow night. And DeRozan is speaking with the media in the next 20-25 minutes. It's going to be emotional. It's going to be a love fest tomorrow night.
Yeah.
A love fest tomorrow night. We got a guy on the line who's familiar with coming back and having deep, deep roots in Toronto. You know, winning his coach in franchise history. Was here for a long time. He and the Pistons rolled through here a couple of months ago and shocked the Raps. Raps were up big in the second half, and the Pistons came back and won on a buzzer beater. And Dwayne had a pretty decent reaction. He was pretty fired up for that win. And the Pistons are coming out of the break, and they're in Atlanta. They're taking on the Hawks tomorrow night. Here is the head coach of the Pistons, longtime coach of the Raptors, back on Overdrive. Here's Dwayne Casey. How you doing, Dwayne?
Hey, Brad, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. You still coming down from that win in Toronto a couple of months ago?
That's been so long ago and so many games ago, Brian. I can't remember, but it was a good win, like all of them. I haven't seen a bad one yet.
It's a good point.
I will take all of them we can get. It's always good to go back where you come, you know, where you used to be, and that's why I always tried to have players, you know, play a little bit more in their home, their former team, because they usually have a little bit more juice, a little bit more intensity, or whatever it is, when they go back and play against their former team.
Well, different role. I mean, you're on the sideline, and DeMar's going to be on the court tomorrow night. But if you could give DeMar DeRozan any advice in terms of what he's going to experience tomorrow night, what would you give him?
Well, you know, it's difficult because, first of all, you're going back into an arena where, you know, you're going into a different locker room, a locker room you've probably never been in that many times, only to visit friends, and you're going in a different entrance, and just but you see the same people. So it's a different emotion, different feeling. That young man, you know, right, wrong, indifferent, he started the whole thing, the stretch of good basketball that the team is having right now. He started it, and he's the only star player who decided to stay there. And, you know, I know it's hard to grasp and hold on to, but he decided to stay when he had other choices to go to other places. And so, you know, my hat is off to him because he had many opportunities to leave, a couple opportunities to leave, and not like a lot of other guys who had been there decided to stay, didn't try to force his way out, didn't try to, you know, talk his way out. He stayed and showed loyalty to the country of Canada and the fans of Toronto.
Well, you would have had this experience when you were in Dallas with Dirk, who obviously isn't from Dallas, and yet he seemed to set up roots there and was really connected to the city.
Right.
But you've been in the league for a long time. I mean, how often do you see players like Dirk in Dallas, like DeMar in Toronto, where mm-hmm. they're not from there, yet they seem right. to connect and they feel like there's a sense of loyalty? How often does that really happen in the NBA?
Well, it's rare. It's rare because there's only a few players that have done it. And then to the just the whole connotation, you're in a different country and different whole nine yards, all the things we fought there for years, the taxes, the customs, and the weather, and all the bull crap that you fight all the time by being in a northern area that, you know, DeMar overlooked. The whole, you know, he fought a lot when we tried to recruit free agents. He helped sell Toronto, the city, and the people, the ownership, and the whole nine yards. So the loyalty factor is there, and there's something to be said for that as far as building a program and not, you know, winning at all costs, but you're building a program with roots. And he should, you know, be applauded for that.
With Dwayne Casey.
Yeah, Dwayne, like, it's interesting when you talk about, you know, DeMar coming from California into Toronto and everything. You know, is that a significant, I mean, not just a foreign country, but to go out of a climate that the players are simply not used to? Like, I mean, it can be a shock.
It's different. And, you know, whether we want to, you know, people who like Toronto and like the people there who have friends there, whether they like it or not, it's real. I mean, it's something that you get asked all the time. And I, you know, recruiting free agents there was always a question about the weather, and it's something you can't change. My line was you play basketball inside. You don't play basketball outside. You play inside. So, but it's real. And you know, whether, you know, want to like it or not, it's there as a question. And for a young man like DeMar from Compton, but again, in the back of DeMar's mind, it's the only place he knew. He was drafted there. People were good to him there. Ownership was good to him there. His teammates, and I'll never forget, he was the only player that came. It was right after the Chris Bosh leaving that he came to the press conference and said, "Hey, look, you know, we're going to build something good here," and we did. So I'll never forget that, and I'll always be indebted to DeMar as being the player that, you know, started things and was a role model and did everything right as far as building a program. And was he a perfect player? No. I mean, I don't know if there's a guy other than his name, LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, is a perfect player, but he had his warts just like we all do. But there's substance to that young man that you can't put a finger on. And he does. He fits the Canadian culture that I learned to to love and to care about, and he fit that culture, and there's something that's worth something, should be worth something.
With Dwayne Casey, head coach of the Pistons, Detroit in Atlanta tomorrow night. DeMar will be back at Scotiabank tomorrow night. Spurs taking on the Raptors. You can hear that right here on TSN Radio. We spoke after the season, after you got let go. You came on the show, and you kind of explained how you felt about the whole scenario. But when we spoke, I don't believe DeMar had been traded yet. Right. If you can take us back to Game 4 against Cleveland, excuse me, were you expecting this much change? I mean, yourself included. This was a three-headed monster in Toronto for a number of years, where it was yourself, Kyle, right, and DeMar. That was the core of the team. And there were other pieces involved, of course. But as you look back on it now, are you surprised that not only yourself moving on, right, but that DeRozan was traded as well?
Well, again, you always are surprised by it, because I thought we had something going there, and unless you do go out and bring a guy like, you know, Leonard or whatever superstar in, you know, we were also in the process of growing, developing, and you're seeing the fruits now of a guy like Pascal Siakam, the fruits of growing him, the fruits of growing a kid like Van Fleet and Jonas Valanciunas, and, you know, turning him into big time assets. So, you know, that's the toughest thing to do, and I said that the entire time I was there, is to develop and win at the same time, and we did that. And so, again, as you're doing that, you never, you know, okay, so we're going to see it to the finish. You always think you're going to see it to the finish, but you know, other people thought otherwise, and that's their prerogative. But didn't see, you know, just because LeBron James, it reminds me so much, Brian, about in the days when Michael Jordan was dominating the East, you know, and again, you know, if you fired every coach that didn't beat the Jordan at that time, or the old Pistons or the old Celtics, you know, there was always, if you know the history of basketball, there's always roadblocks to get over until it's your turn. And so we were going through that with James there in Cleveland, and you know, he went there 9 straight years to the finals and got us in the conference finals, semifinals, and again, that wasn't enough, but that's ownership's prerogative and the general manager's prerogative. But you know, there's a lot of other coaches he went through at the same time that couldn't get over that hurdle. And it eventually was going to happen if he had stayed there, but fortunately for the East, he left. And we all now have an opportunity to fight for the Eastern Conference.
Dwayne, I'm not going to ask this question as any type of an indictment, but, I mean, with all your experiences in the game, and you talked about winning and developing, and we know what the demands are on winning and everything, but do you see a difference, like, not only at the NBA level, but at the college level, where players are expecting to be in a certain role without having developed the requisite, you know, not only physical skills, but the mental awareness to excel in those roles?
Craig, that is a great point, in the fact that, you know, young players coming into the league, there's so much, so many expectations with young players coming to the NBA, and I do fault the AAU system in the fact that, you know, you go and play, you know, 3 or 4 games on the weekend, and you don't, you know, it doesn't matter how many games you win or lose, just as long as you get enough touches or that many points or get your numbers or whatever. So it's that now factor and that now time and instant. Everybody wants instant success, instant minutes, instant points, instant touches. And it just doesn't happen that way in the NBA. You know, there's an old tried and true rule. You got to pay your dues in the NBA to get where you want to go. And a lot of times you're going to hit a lot of bump in the roads and have a lot of failures. But it's how you come out of those failures that you do build something special, something that lasts, not something that's a flash in the night. That's good for now, but 2 years from now, you don't, you know, recognize what you've tried to build. So, young players a lot of times don't understand that, and that's called coaching. That's part of coaching and teaching and mentoring. Hopefully you have guys around like a DeMar DeRozan, you know, on your team that can talk to young players and let them know what he went through as a young player to get to where he is, a 4-time All-Star, and, you know, who led a team to the conference finals, to the top of the Eastern Conference from the bottom. And it was while he was growing that he did that, and that's a story to be told to a lot of young players.
Well, it's very germane to the biggest story in American sports right now, what happened with that Duke-UNC game last night where Zion Williamson, you know, he blew a shoe and almost blew his knee out, and now everyone's having the debate, you know, should he ever play again, et cetera. Right. You know, you were at Kentucky. You won, you know, a national title at Kentucky. You spent 4 years there. I won't ask you to get into the whole debate about high school and the draft and all that kind of stuff, but can you speak to how valuable that was for you, just learning how to win, you know, and actually having that memory of winning an NBA or an NCAA title?
Brian, not only winning, but becoming a man. I just think that there's so many things you go through in life as a young man, and then you throw them into the NBA arena, the travel, the finances, the relationships, or whatever it is. You know, if you don't go to college and go through a college situation where somebody's telling you what to do, what time to be to class, and be held accountable for going to class and doing those things, it's very difficult to go from a teenager into a man's world. And whether we like it or not, the NBA is a man's world. And so those years are precious. And all this stuff about shouldn't go to college, you know, I know talking to Cliff Hagan back in the day when he was athletic director at Kentucky, he talked about those guys had to go to the military, you know, then come back and play basketball. So you're talking about teaching you how to become a man, going to the military taught those guys that, and they were better basketball players, better fathers, better husbands because of that. So the notion of that you shouldn't go to college and you shouldn't play, you know, the young man, I don't even know the young man, but he would probably be somewhere in a rec gym playing somewhere anyway, and that shoe could pop out or you could hurt your knee there working out somewhere anyway. So, but again, I think that may be too old school, but I think young men should go to college, enjoy the experience, learn how to be a man, learn how to be held accountable, learn to told no, you know, because a lot of guys coming out of those situations have never been told no before. And all at once, here's this big, bad NBA coach saying, hey, you can't do that, you can't do this, you got to do it this way. And that's a whole new line of learning and line of executing or playing the game from that standpoint. So it's so many things that you can learn by a college experience that I know I learned at Kentucky and winning the championship. I learned how to win. I knew how hard it was to win and had a great coach in Joby Hall. So, you know, I recommend to a lot of young players to go to college and enjoy the experience and learn as much as you can before you jump into this game. Believe me, if you're a top pick this year, I promise you, you know, you're going to be in the same stratosphere, same status in the draft a couple of years from now.
With Dwayne Casey, we'll get you out of here on this, and I would love some honesty and some candor in this moment. You look at the standings, there's a chance, there's a very good chance, Detroit-Toronto in the first round. Are you tracking that or what, Dwayne?
No, I promise. All we want to do is get in the dance. We're exactly where we were first year in Toronto, just trying to become relevant. I mean, the difference is in Detroit, there's three trophies sitting there looking at me every day, championship trophies that they've won, three parades that they've had. But we're trying to get back to that, close to that level. We're not there. We're not there yet. Changing the style of play. I think we're 10th in defense right now. But you know, we're the same place where we were in Toronto. I think at that time we were 30th in defense and 20 something in offense. And we're trying to get our program there. So all our goal is right now is to get into the dance. You know, 8th, 7th, whatever it is. Brian, and then from there make some noise. And again, to win in this league, you know, that's a reason why San Antonio's been so successful. The years Utah's been successful, Chicago, you know, that continuity, that consistency, you know, it may be boring and not exciting. You may hit bumps in the road, but to build something special in this league that lasts, you know, there's got to be consistency, and that's what we're trying to build here. And we're taking our lumps. And, you know, proud of it and learn from it and man up from it. But it doesn't matter who we play, just as long as we get in there this year and try to make some noise from there.
Well, we're always tracking it up here. You know that. We wish you nothing but success tomorrow night and the rest of the way. And hopefully we see in Toronto a lot come April. Good luck the rest of the way, Dwayne. We appreciate you doing this.
That'd be great, Brian. Great, always great talking to you, my friend. And like I said, you represent the NBA, as far as the sports media is concerned, there in Toronto.
I appreciate it. Thanks, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
Okay, thank you, buddy.
There's Dwayne Casey, head coach of the Detroit Pistons.
There's a bromance.
Yeah, he was always good to us. Like, and he's a guy, you know, like, listen, I understand we're in the media, and when you had to take runs, you take runs, and I think he knows that. But he's been in studio with us a bunch over the years, and really good guy. He's and winningest coach in franchise history. That's a fact.
There's not a time where I haven't listened to Dwayne Casey talk about his team or talk about life or talk about development. Just like there where he was talking about going to school and he was talking about Joby Hall and, you know, growing up and learning and, you know, nothing worth built, nothing that's going to stand up for a long time is happens overnight. I joke all the time. It's not a joke. The next quick rebuild will be the first one.
Right.
They don't
Doesn't
exist.
Happen.
But he is an impressive, intelligent person and somebody I would love to just go and spend an evening with.
Basketball lifer
yeah,
too,
oh,
right?
Yeah, but like, just but he's got real life wisdom. Mm-hmm. I love
and
it.
Perspective
yeah,
and
love.
I'm so happy Owen Noodles aren't here though, because if they heard that, they would just be carving me.
Why?
They always goof on me and Casey.
You've earned it.
Oh, thank you, Craig.
That's respect.
Yeah.
Always great talking to you, my friend. And
I know Mullen's going to grease me tomorrow and play that for the boys. They'll hear about it.
Well, you know what? When you establish good relationships and a good rapport, that's what you get.
That's right.
So maybe they should work harder at that.
Well, here's what this has always been my counter when they start barking away at me. I'm like, do you know how many times over the years we've had their buddies and former teammates on? And invariably, this is how the interview ends. All right, oh, Noodles, great talking with you, buddies. Yeah. Like, see you later. They never acknowledge me.
And they call him O and Noodles.
Oh, and Noodles,
hey, buddy,
and
remember
guy.
That night when we were out there? Yeah.
It's
sure.
always like, hey, great chat with you, O. Noodles, you too, guys. We'll see you guys down the road.
Different kind of bromance.
Very different.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's my time to shine.
Darn right.
Words.
Chin up, shoulders back.
Thank you, Craig. We're going to get into GSP retiring. Elias Theodoru will be in studio, who is the 14th ranked middleweight in the UFC. He's got a fight coming up in Ottawa in early May. So we'll get Elias in here. We'll get his take on the legacy of GSP, how he's training for this fight. How is GSP the GOAT? I mean, a lot of people would suggest he's the greatest UFC fighter of all time. So we'll get Elias in here. We'll get his take on that. Leafs Capitals coming up at 7. We'll tee that up later in the hour. You can watch that on TSN 4. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. Elias Theodoru will be in studio in just a moment. UFC fighter. He's got a fight coming up in Ottawa in May, and we'll look back on the career of GSP, who I'm sure he was very inspired by. You know, GSP is one of the all-time great UFC fighters and certainly the greatest Canadian fighter of all time. And he officially retired today. And it's a shame because he said he wanted to fight Khabib. Like, Khabib issued that challenge, and I guess there had been some back channeling ongoing for quite some time, but just because of the weight classes, it wasn't going to work. It wasn't going to get sanctioned. The UFC wasn't going to allow it to happen. But that would have been outstanding to see GSP Khabib. That's something I think most of us would sign off on.
Yeah, I mean, Khabib is.
That dude can tilt.
Oh, yeah.
That kid can fight. And
well,
you know what?
And it's a little bit different now for GSP. Like, you know, it's almost like you wish. You know this too, talking to athletes. They always talk about wanting to play an important game when they were in their prime. So you'd love to see that fight when GSP was in his prime.
That's right. When he was in his late 20s and rocking, like 10 years ago, let's see what that would have been. Because they're very similar. They're very disciplined. They treat their opponents with respect outside of Conor McGregor because of what you know he incited. But Khabib is a guy who's all about discipline, all about the form, all about the training, all about, you know, it doesn't have to be flashy, but it's going to be effective. And George St. Pierre was very similar in that fashion. We just had Dwayne Casey join us of the Detroit Pistons, and we've got a couple of seats to give away. Coors Light Northern Invasion bus is headed to Detroit and for the Raptors Pistons March 3rd. So to win, you have to listen to the Raptors on 1050 this Friday and this Sunday, and we will announce a secret keyword that you can text to 105050 for your chance to win tickets to that game, overnight accommodations, and a road trip you will never forget. A winner will be announced next Monday on First Up. So that is a big, big giveaway. So tune into the Raptors on 1050.
And they say the Little Caesars Arena is phenomenal.
I've heard. We were talking about it.
I haven't been in.
Yeah, that didn't come up yesterday because we were talking about the 20th anniversary of Scotiabank, and we were kind of going around about different rinks. And Little Caesars never came up, but I believe it's the newest one. It just opened last year, right?
Yes, it did, yeah.
Like, it looks phenomenal on TV.
Everybody tells me it's an unbelievable facility.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
So, like, I've heard it's too nice in the options, the restaurants and all that. That's why people aren't going to their seats. They're hanging out in the corridors.
Well, and Mr. Illich, who was the late Mr. Illich, the late great Mr. Illich, who was such a big part of Detroit sports, but more than that, you know, the Detroit community, the arts, you know, minor athletics, allowing kids to participate and everything. Just a great, great man. And, you know, for that arena to open up, I mean, the vision, but that area of the city, it's absolutely phenomenal. I lived in Ann Arbor for 12 years, Brian, and where Joe Louis was, and the city had become dilapidated, and, you know, in that area. And I mean, they've built up that area now with Ford Field and Little Caesars Arena and Co-America Park. I mean, it is...
Everything I've heard.
It's unbelievable.
My parents went through Detroit in the summer, and my grandfather lived in Flint. My whole life, he moved there in the 60s, so we've been really connected to Michigan my whole life, been going down there in Flint, and Detroit's about 45 minutes away, I think, from Flint, but obviously we all know what happened in the 80s, and Flint got beaten even worse than
it
Detroit,
sure
it got crushed, but my parents went through Detroit in the summer, and my dad was texting me, he's like, I can't believe what they've done down here. Like, the state filed bankruptcy, or the city did, I believe, the city filed bankruptcy,
no
Detroit, and he said, you wouldn't believe it, downtown Detroit. How beautiful it is now and what they've done.
I don't know if you ever heard what Mr. Ilitch did in Comerica Park because he owns the Tigers, but one of the big three, I want to say it was GM, was a big sponsor. And in center field, where they had the advertising, GM paid a lot of money to have that advertising. You know, obviously fly balls, it's always there, right?
Yeah.
And when the big three hit the real difficulties, he, you know, GM didn't have the money for advertising. He gave it to Chrysler, Ford, and GM free of charge.
Right.
I mean, this was a Detroiter
that
cared about Detroiters.
Well,
I mean, when I say great, I mean, he, like, just a phenomenal, phenomenal person.
Well, in the auto industry, you drive around Michigan with a foreign car, you are asking for trouble.
Yes,
now,
you
if
are.
You're from out of state, but if you have Michigan plates and you're driving a Mercedes-Benz or something, look
out.
Did
I ever tell you about my first story?
No.
So we're living in Ann Arbor. It's like early on. I have a Honda Prelude. So I'm at a light, and there's a van, and the lady's pointed at something, right? I'm going, like, what's wrong, right? So I roll down my window. She goes, what are you doing driving a foreign car? And I was like, whoa,
yeah,
okay.
We're in Michigan now,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, it was pretty clear.
And oh, yeah.
I think that's when we went to the GMC Yukon and the Ford Windstar.
You got three options.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You just got to pick one of those three.
Oh, yeah, we moved quick. There was nothing mean or like abusive or anything.
It was civic pride.
Yeah, it really was.
You know,
it's
like, you know, they always say you're always connected, you know, 6 degrees separation or whatever. Down there, if you were from Michigan, you knew someone that was connected to one of them.
Oh, absolutely.
Someone you knew, and usually it was really close to you, worked at one of the plants or whatever.
Oh, absolutely. There was no question.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of our friends were. And on both sides, whether it be on the assembly line, whether it be in the union, whether it be in the management, it was all
you
the way
through. You knew somebody that worked
all
at
the
one
way
of
through.
Yeah. No, it's and that's great to hear about Detroit. I mean,
it really is.
Because it is perception. You're breaking down perception, right? Because Detroit, it gets goofed on a lot, and people are like, ah, it's Detroit. And, you know, you lived there. When you went downtown, I remember going to a Tigers game in the early, maybe mid-90s. Terrifying. I was a teenager. I was probably 14 or 15. But just driving to Tiger Stadium was terrifying, going through downtown Detroit.
Well, Joe Louis was similar. It was like, go to the game and get out.
Get the hell out.
Tiger Stadium, you used to always want to go to the afternoon games. You didn't want to go to the night games because it was highly recommended, you know, don't go, don't be around there at night if you're not familiar with the area.
Yeah. Well, and it's not alone. Like, no. Chicago Stadium had that reputation.
Sure did. I got stuck one time in the old Chicago Stadium. I'd parked on one side of the building, but I was on the other side and looking for my car. Police officer came right over to me. He goes, what are you doing? I said, I'm looking for my car. He goes, well, I'll walk with you.
Get out. Yeah, you got to get out of here.
Yeah.
A lot of Canadians have had those stories. Uh-huh. It's like you were two blocks away. Cops are like, you're not from here, clearly. Get the hell out of here. Gordon Miller, who's calling the game tonight in Jersey, Devils sends, he just sent out a tweet. Stone, DeZingle, and Duchesne are not on the ice for warm-up. They're not playing. So the three big Ottawa Senators, and I think that basically tells you the story. I mean, maybe they knock out a contract for Stone or DeZingle, maybe, but feels like it's done. The three of them are going to get dealt.
I said this yesterday, Brian, on SC. I said it last night on TH. Without clarity to the situation with Matt Duchesne, Mark Stone, and Ryan DeZingle, it would be irresponsible for the organization to play these guys. I wouldn't even practice them. I said that, like, I'd get them bubble wrap, have them on the couch, Like, you know, try to make sure they have less than 100 steps.
Absolutely. Like what you could attempted. Do that. They should hire
me. Right? And we'll have them fed and everything on the couch. Right? They won't even have to move because I don't want them. Because this is about the future of the franchise.
You're right.
And there's no way you can take any risk. Not even in practice. Sorry. Well,
and the Rangers are playing tonight. And McQuaid, Zuccarello, and Kevin Haynes are all in warm-up. And they're all playing. Yeah. So, you know, and we believe those three are going at some point.
Well, I think, too, Marcus Johansson is also out of the lineup.
Yes, for Jersey. He's out.
So another player. Yep. So. I mean, you look at the teams that are looking to do something. Yeah. So
I think Milan Lucic might be out of the lineup tonight. You got to save him in case you can move him, Craig. Maybe you can move him. You got to be careful with Keith Gretzky.
You had me for about 4 seconds.
You got to be careful. And I'm going like,
don't tell me there's something out there.
No. I don't think he's on the trade bait board.
I looked at him and I went, okay, no, he's just pulling my leg.
I don't think he's on the trade bait board.
I'm gullible, you know. Don't be doing that.
Sorry about that. Elias Theodoro will join us in studio, get his take on the history and the legacy of GSP. He's got a fight coming up in May. He will join us in studio next. All right, the Leafs in action tonight, 7 p.m. You can watch it on TSN 4. Nazem Kadri won't play. William Nylander will be up the middle of the ice. We've been talking about that throughout the afternoon. DeMar DeRozan back in town. He's speaking with the media, I believe, any moment now. And he'll be at Scotiabank tomorrow night. We talked a lot about this yesterday. George St. Pierre, we knew what was coming today. The news broke yesterday that he would be announcing his retirement at the age of 37. And the face of MMA for a long time, certainly, you know, Canadian MMA. This guy's a Canadian sports legend. And Craig, I don't think you've ever been in the octagon.
I haven't, but I haven't.
I personally have not.
No, I either. Have not. I have no plans to go into the octagon unless it's just like kind of as a tour.
Yeah, like before the fights.
yeah,
like the weeks before the fights.
Yeah, like when the building's empty and there's no risk.
Happy to walk through there. Like run, a brisk walk, but I'll get through. We got a guy in studio who has been in the octagon many times. He's going to be back in it, UFC Fight Night in Ottawa on May 4th. Tickets go on sale March 8th. Elias Theodoro is in studio. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming up here. You know from experience, you've trained with GSP. I'm sure you've watched his fights. You've studied him. When you hear the name George St. Pierre as a fighter, what does that mean to you?
Well, it basically encompasses mixed martial arts. Obviously, like you mentioned, specifically in Canada. As a fan first, I got to watch, you know, his rise and also the rise of the sport as well, because he was kind of synonymous to it, especially in the early days before it became quote-unquote mainstream. Mixed martial arts, UFC, kind of had, almost this... this look at it in regards to it wasn't really accepted as a professional sport, and who better to have as an ambassador than a very polite, dominant champion from Canada?
Well, and he wasn't faking it either, right?
No,
like
he's even nicer than it looks.
I've interviewed him before, and I've been around him, like in his presence, and you can tell he seems like a pretty calm, low key guy. I mean, his story speaks for itself. I think most people are aware of it and familiar with it, but you know, he treats his opponents with respect. You know, and you don't see that all the time. You know, we're just talking about the Habib news and how Habib approaches it compared to Conor McGregor and how he approached it. But what kind of details could you take out of George St. Pierre that you've tried to apply to your own career?
Well, he's a master strategist. He's someone that obsesses over it, and that's why he almost needed that hiatus beforehand before he came back and took on Bisping, just because he was never really able to enjoy the fruits of his labor. While he, you know, obsessed over the next fight and would win, and then as soon as he won, he was right next to the next fight because he already knew, you know, who was fighting for the eliminator and, you know, who was
who's
the number contender, who's next,
yeah.
You know.
Right.
He always had a target on his back for about 7 years, give or take, while he was champion. And, you know, he needed that break to kind of come back and, you know, he did what most people couldn't, in the fact that he was able to come after a 4-year layoff and go up a weight class and take on, a very tough champion in his own right, Michael Bisping. And now there was obviously negotiations in some capacity to go down a weight class to fight another what seems, you know, almost, technically is unstoppable because he is undefeated with Khabib Nurmagomedov at 155. So, that didn't materialize. And, you know, it's one of those things that so few, no matter what the sport is, actually walk away in the sunset. And, all the power to him to be able to walk away with not only one belt, but two.
Yeah, it's so true. So you talked about George and just the impact he had on the growth of the sport. You watched him. So what was it like when you first started to train with him? And, like, you're in the presence with him. And, you know, here's this bigger-than-life figure now. Now you're training with him.
Yeah, well, it's one of those cases where he's just so humble. The first time I met him, one of my former wrestling coaches, he was actually his former wrestling coach. So we went up to Montreal to train because TriStar, it's like obviously the mecca of mixed martial arts in Canada. And we were at some dinner, we're at some restaurant or whatever, and George walks by and goes, "Oh, hey, Nick, great to see you, great to see you." We kind of exchange pleasantries, etc. "We'll see you at the gym tomorrow," etc. He walks off. We continue the rest of our dinner, and then it was the case where when we went to go pay for it, it turned out he already paid for dinner on us.
No way.
Yeah, like that. That's the kind of person he is, right? Before, like, without even asking, without even making a thing about it. And then, flashback a couple years later when I won the Ultimate Fighter and whatnot, first thing when he said, "Well, congratulations on your career so far. You're doing really well." And it's like, but you're the champion? Right. Like, it was just one of those things where I almost think that he doesn't even think of himself as a champion. Obviously, there's the aspect of the legacy and what he's been able to accomplish. Of course, that's what he, for the most part, thinks about. But I still think he thinks of himself as just George.
That's such an unreal move, picking up the check.
Yeah.
Like, I'd have to be like, "No, I picked that up." Like, I'd have
but
to
just
tell
quietly
people.
Going about it.
I wouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah, no, just walked no off. Way. Didn't even bring it up.
Yeah, I'd have to be like, "No, I picked
see,
that
you
up."
You heard that, though. He's a strategist.
Right, yeah, exactly.
It all works out in the end. Elias Theodoro is in studio, and Elias has his own fight coming up, UFC Fight Night in Ottawa, May 4th. Tickets go on sale March 8th. So as you prepare now, you've been in the Octagon many times. How would you take us through the growth of a fighter, you know, compared to other sports where you're in your 30s and you're in your prime, where some sports, you know, in your early 20s, mid 20s, that's it. You know, there's different rankings. It's an individual sport. It's not a team sport. How have you grown as an athlete and as a member of the MMA world?
It's just adding to that 10,000 hour mark, right? Like, so I started later than most in the capacity that I was, you know, in my first year of university, and lightening the mind, I thought the body should follow. And soon I realized they were intertwined with mixed martial arts. And I kind of, you know, fan first and fell in love with it and just never left the gym. Now, fast tracking to where we stand today, it's kind of just building blocks, right? Like, the more time, the more mat time you get in the cage, on game day is what kind of adds up, because, you know, I've done this now. I've done a jab 1,000 times. I've done, you know, a takedown a couple of thousand times. It's this thing that the muscle memory that's in it, right? But the most important thing is the muscle of the brain, because, you know, not the best person. The best person doesn't always win on game day. It's who can actually be the best person on game day, because that's all that matters. So a lot of it has to do with, you know, tunnel vision in the capacity of you're chipping away of, you know, now I'm just shy of 3 months. It's a little bit of the spaghetti rule, because you throw everything on the wall and see what sticks during camp, and then you start cutting off the edges. And, you know, I have an opponent named Derek Brunson, tough individual. He's 8th in the world, while I find myself a lucky 13 at the moment. And the plan is to just basically outsmart him, outmaneuver him in every way possible. As much as it is a sport, and there's obviously so much calculation, there's also big variables that go into right. it. So you got to roll with the punches is basically what it is. Everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's such a great line. It's one of the great lines, right? And it applies in all walks of life, but it certainly applies in yes. MMA.
Yeah, everyone's got the plan until you get popped. I mean, it's a tough sport. You're rolling into the Octagon. You have to be courageous. You've got to be confident, but you're allowed to be. Is there any fear? Are you allowed to be fearful at all before you step into the Octagon?
You definitely want to be fearful in some capacity. Those butterflies, and that's the failure of doing it in front of people, really. Because we've done this all a million times in every single training session, every single practice, mental preparation leading up to it. It's just the fear of failure in front of other people. And it's that realization that, you know, I have lost. Luckily, knock on wood, I've only lost by, you know, split decisions and decisions. So, it's a little easier to take than, let's say, if someone was to get knocked out, right? Because that's much more dramatic in regards to not only that night, but carrying forward what happens in regards to, you know, how you're going to beat. Because everyone has so many chips, right? And you can only lose so many chips until it's much easier to lose those chips.
Right.
And that's very evident, obviously, in mixed martial arts and boxing. And we've all seen those people who, unfortunately, either, you know, lose their chin or you know, stay longer than they should. But point being, in many ways, it's just trying to kind of capture that feeling, because there are restless nights. There are, you know, all those, you know, doubts that everyone else has, but it's trying to, you know, foster that into the right emotion. And, you know, I don't necessarily get angry, because I think anger or any type of emotion is a finite resource. And I try to be as clear-headed as possible and kind of just harness whatever kind of nerves that, you know, show up on game day.
Elias Theodoro in studio again. It's going to be UFC Fight Night in Ottawa, May 4th. And, you know, you mentioned it, getting knocked out, that's going to be tough. And Matt Serra got GSP. GSP only lost twice, but the second time was at the Bell Center in Montreal. And I've seen interviews with Serra. He's like, I knew I was going to get roasted, like, because the Bell Center was rocking and GSP was ready. And, you know, he was waiting to get back at him. There isn't necessarily a home octagon, but as a Canadian fighting in Ottawa, are you hopeful that, you know, you're going to create that same kind of buzz and that can be a big benefit for you?
Oh, definitely. It definitely helps. It definitely helps to have the hometown crowd on your side.
Right.
You know, the 17,000 cheers versus boos definitely help. You know, but I've been on the other side, and where, you know, you get to kind of show not only your opponent, but also everyone in the crowd who's boss. So there's positives on both ends, but you know, I'm always excited to find a home. I fought in Ottawa before the last time they were out there, and it was a sold out venue there, and I'm expecting much the same this time around, and it's going to be exciting. Obviously, I'm fighting on May 4th, so May the 4th be with everyone that day, and I'm also going to be enjoying Cinco de Mayo the next day.
Oh, that's what you want to be doing, right?
That's more in our area.
A celebratory Cinco de Mayo.
That's where Craig and I can join you.
Yeah.
We're the veterans when it comes to that.
There you go.
I mean, what's that like if you win a fight and you're like, okay, now I know I've got three or four
months
off?
Nothing like it. Just, again, the feeling doesn't really kind of truly hit you until you're almost walking away from the octagon.
Sure.
Again, it's this whole build up, whether it's months or years, etc., to this one specific moment. And in some ways, it's a relief first, because it could have gone the other way. And that's the kind of the amazing thing about it. That's what makes it such an amazing sport, because there's so much on the line versus other sports where, you know, in baseball, you have 150 days where, you know, let's just win at least half of those and we're doing good. Yeah.
We're in the
500 team, we're good.
Yeah, you strike out a couple of times in the game. You got tomorrow to play.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Doesn't matter. Elias, again, will be fighting in UFC Fight Night in Ottawa on May 4th. Tickets go on sale March 8th. We wish you nothing but success.
Thanks
we'll
so
be
much.
Watching it and tracking it. And thank you for coming up in studio. We really appreciate it.
Pleasure's all mine. Love
thanks.
The chat once I win.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We'll call you. We'll get you back in studio.
There
man. Win's coming. Again, UFC Fight Night, May 4th. He is Elias Theodoro joining us in studio. We appreciate it. Craigie, thanks for popping in too, buddy.
My pleasure.
You're doing
I
whole
love
rounds
being
now
guys.
And everything? And
yeah, just it's a Thursday night.
Oh,
the NHL.
That's right, man.
4 days to trade deadline.
Love it. Thanks. We're out of here. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.